Harih Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navahitamastu Ma Vidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Page 4, Adhikarana Anushilanam, Anusharanam. Summary of thematic Adhikaranas. Adhikarana 1 through 3, Sutras 1 through 6. Refutation of Shankya and Yoga on their perspective about the Vedas. This subsection removes the taint of the opposition claiming that the Vedas is an unreliable source of knowledge. The efforts is to establish by any or all means the scriptures, such as the Sharirya Smriti, Yoga Smriti, etc., as being bona fide over the Vedas. The Sutrakara triumphantly establishes the Vedas to be flawless. So the point is because they're dealing with a philosophy that's not actually correct. And so the Vedas won't actually support it. So then, because of their attachment to their particular philosophy, therefore, then to support their philosophy, which their sutras then they think will, then they'll say the Vedas are not reliable. Right. So in other words, the Vedas there, but more important is what's given by whoever is the head of their lines, right? You know, by their acharyas, and so. For understanding the Veda, yes, that is important, but unless it's based on the Veda, then it has no meaning. So Manasamhita makes that very clear. If your philosophy, everything's not based on the Veda, it's actually not proper. It's not bona fide. It has to be based on the Veda. So in this case, they have that faith in their acharyas, but it's only for their own purpose, like we see with anyone in karma and jnana, that they will perform their activities and have that respect for authority and everything, as long as it supports what they're interested in. Does that make sense? So, once they attain whatever they're looking for, then they don't care about this respect or worship anymore. So they do that for Krishna, they'll do that for the acharyas, like this. Yeah? So it's a temporary thing. So it looks like they have great faith in everything, but it's actually they have great attachment to their specific material gain they will get in karma yajna.
Maharaj, Vyasadev is the original compiler of Shrutis, Smritis, Puranas and all the Vedic traditions, right?
He's the original compiler, Vyasadev, yes, yes. Yeah. Means the Veda is already there, but he compiles it, because otherwise the Veda is together as one Veda, the Atharva Veda, because everything's in it. So, because people, one, won't have the time to put in the to study the whole volume of the Veda and then have an understanding. And two, without more of a thematic approach, they also can't understand it. Therefore, he divides the Veda into four. The four divisions are always there, but they're within one Veda. So you have, but it will be mixed, because you have the Rig Veda will be all the riks, all the core verses, all the hymns, like that. So they're spread throughout the Veda. So all those are called riks. Then the prose sections, that's all the Atharva. All the songs, that's all the Sama. So they're all mixed together. And so then to study the whole thing is a very great work, because you'd have to study all four Vedas, be able to get through all that variety of presentations, and then be able to come to a conclusion. So that takes much more qualified persons. So then Vyasadeva then just separates it into those four sections, so that then one can very easily, or more easily, approach it. Not very easily, but more easily. And then for the smritis, which are the various conversations of great personalities, then those, then he compiles those also. He puts them together in that. Like the Bhagavatam, he spoke the Bhagavatam first, and then Sukadeva heard that, then he spoke it to Parikit, and then Suta Goswami, then hearing that recitation, then spoke it to the sages of Naimisharanya. So then what was then written was that conversation of it.
Yeah. So the question is, like, when Vyasadeva has written all the Vedic literatures, including the smritis, then we also have jivas like these, you know, compiling the smritis, you know, so is it that
jivas like these?
These means Kapila, Patanjali.
Even means they're making their own scriptures.
And they are being classified as smritis.
Smriti means that they're written, but they're not smriti as such on the Vedic version, like what we're talking about, the Puranas and all these other literatures. Those will have their own authority because that should be accepted by all. Then they have their own, where their acharyas are writing, those smritis will be the particular approach to however they are applying the shruti and smriti that's already there. In other words, the classical texts are there, and then the third stage is the acharyas. So there, what they write, that's also smriti. But it should be in support of the other two. But in this case, it's not. You know what I'm saying? So this is where this is the whole point of the Vedanta Sutras, because words then become confusing because they have multiple applications. Right? So we say we should support the smriti, and so then the acharya has written something, so that's smriti, so therefore what he does and the other ones we don't care about. But that's why then the offense to the holy name of not appreciating the Vedic literatures are those in pursuance of the Vedic version. So the Vedic literatures will be the Shruti and Smriti, the classical literatures, and those in pursuance of will be those written by the acharyas.
Right? Thomas, when some personality writes some Smriti like Shankya Smriti like that, it means it depends on their intent?
Yes, what's their intent? Just like you see Kapila Muni, what he's published, you know, for the son of Devaki, yeah, then that's bona fide. That's given in the Bhagavatam. Yes. And so that's just an analytical study of the universe, so that when we're using the intelligence to try to separate ourselves from our attachment to the gross and subtle nature, then it's more easy to do because you have the tools by which you can analyze it.
Yes.
Does that make sense? But here they're using it too for their own purpose in karma and gyan.
Yes.
So then it takes on a lower level. So yes, you can say the scriptures, but they're specifically applicable to them.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
But only the acharya can see what is the intent of the different texts.
Yes. Yes. So that's why then we follow what the acharyas say, what we should read, what we should not read, what we study or not. Like in Prabhupada's books, he'll be giving an explanation, he'll be quoting from the acharyas, and then for more detail in that particular area, then he'll say, study a particular book. You know, you can get more information on this. Like, I think it's like Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So then Prabhupada mentions, if you want to know about Vaishnavas and the culture of the Vaishnavas and about Krishna, then you study Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So he'll say what's there, what you're looking at. So that's then given. You know, also the... not sure if it's Narottam Das Thakur, I think he says when one is eager to study the works of the Goswamis, then you'll be able to understand the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Otherwise, you won't. Because without studying how the acharyas approach it, because they're involved in that, so then we can appreciate what the mood is there. But unless we see it from specifically our line, you won't see Braj. Vrindavan is there. All those pastimes are there. Radha and Krishna pastimes are already given by so many of the acharyas. But it's just a matter of the approach. Because, as we said, is that Krishna, he has these two... I mean, he has three features, right? Bhagavan, Paramatma, and Brahman. So Paramatma and Brahman, then those, give rise to the appreciation of the greatness of God, or the opulence of God, so majesty. And Bhagavan gives rise to the sweetness. Right? So then we can say, as Vaikuntha and Dwarka, then are mixes of those. So all three are there, they're all accepted, but when you put more emphasis on Paramatma and Brahman, then you'll get more Aishwarya. When you put it on Bhagavan, then it'll be there. So it's not that they're not worshipping Bhagavan, they have love for him. They're on the platform of prema and Vaikuntha. But it's prema for that person who is God. Right? And so God means that Paramatma aspect, that feature. So then Braj, because it's about Bhagavan without the Paramatma and Brahman considerations in giving it for being a cause of, say, inspiration or Udipan, right? So then that's what makes the flavor difference. It's not that the Brajavasis don't understand about Paramatma and Brahman. It's just that it's not important for appreciating. Does that make sense? Like that. Let's say, like, someone has a taste for refined things. You give them something refined. They appreciate it on its own worth. Now, let's say someone who's not so developed in that area, they'll be eating and you know, it's okay. But then when you say, oh, do you know this is this from this time and I got it here, and now their appreciation goes up and now they'll pay more attention and appreciate it. Like that. Not that the sweetness is not there, it's that they appreciate the sweetness because of the inspiration of the opulence. But the amount, volume of sweetness is smaller compared to the volume of majesty. Right? Then in Dwarka it'll be, you know, basically half-half, but in Vrindavan it'll be just sweetness. It doesn't require the support of Aishwarya to appreciate him as a person. Right? So it means he as a person is who they have affection for. He happens to be God, then that's there. That's just part of the thing. It's just it can just add as anything else. It's not that it has its own special flavor. Does that make sense? Well, and the others is because he's got that adds to it. You know, it makes it greater. You know, it's just like you're talking, like it's always the interesting, the difference between like the English and the American kind of approach is that the British, they won't necessarily, unless it's needed or someone asks, they won't mention their own specific qualifications. You know, unless it's something expected or something. But otherwise, they won't mention. So you could be knowing the person for years and not know all the things that they know. You know, like let's say they know music or they know something else or cooking. You won't know that unless the situation comes up. Because they don't mention it. Because it's about just the interaction between the people. But the American thing is generally you always mention all those things just so you have a basis to know who they are. You know, because it's thought that then you'll know better, and so therefore the relationship will be better. But it's dependent more upon that qualities. Does that make sense? So it's not about, and so that's one of the aspects. The farther you come towards this side, then it's just more about they like you, and that's good. That's enough. It doesn't matter the background, this, that, you know. So that's the whole point, the Brajabasi. So as these things, if they're there and revealed, it doesn't matter. It just expands their already appreciation. But it's not the basis of it. That's the difference. Vaikuntha, it's the basis. So that's the aspect here, is that we're trying to establish that the Veda is the Praman. That's very important. So here is, for them, it's Praman as long as it supports what they do. And so that is a disease that we get attached to these Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. And so then whatever we're attached to, then we accept the scripture as long as it supports that particular attachment. Rather than scripture says this, it's different from how I understood it or would practice it, so therefore I should be considering bringing my understanding and lifestyle in line with what the scripture says. rather than only accept what part I like and what part I don't. Is that, yeah? Adhikarana is 4 and 5, sutras 7 through 12. Who's the first cause? So this is the origin of who's on first? Yes. The Shankyas claim that the mature world is an effect of nothingness. Right? So we see it actually goes back to, again, that Buddhistic kind of thing. Because you see is they're not so fixed in the Shastra. Fixed in their own Shastra, they'll follow the lifestyle in that, but they're not as fixed. The faith in the scripture is not as deep as it actually should be. So we see as you start to leave scripture, then you actually have to come back to nothingness, because scripture describes everything. So when you remove the authority of scripture, you end up with nothing. Okay? Hence, they say nothingness is the cause of creation, because otherwise, well, what causes that? Well, nothing. You know, it's just, what else do you do? Additionally, the philosophies of Kanada, Akshapada Gotama, because he has eyes on his feet. Yeah. Declare that large entities arise from smaller particles. Hence, their doctrine states particles as the cause of creation. The Sutrakar refutes the nothingness theory by proving that the material world is a real effect of a real cause. Brahman. Furthermore, the particle theory is refuted by proving that the particles are eternal and Brahman is the ingredient of creation. Hence, the first cause is neither nothingness nor particles, but Brahman. Right? Because you can say it's particles, but the point is where the particles come from. So then you get the nothingness. But here, no, the particles come from Brahman. So everything's based on Brahman. Adhikarana 7, Sutras 7 through 12. Transformation by word. This subsection deals with the Nyayikas and Vaisheshikas' viewpoint that material cause is different from the effect. Because you see is that the cause is one thing, the effect you see is another. But actually, if you study, you can see that there's a connection. You can see the cause in the effect. But they're trying to separate it. So then from this also, this principle will arise all your aspects of, even if you are theistic, then it'll be up to a limit. You'll only accept certain aspects of Godhead, or he'll be deified, or different things will be there that we accept, okay, yes, God is good, so therefore all the good things and all the bad things that can't be connected with God, so someone else has to be in charge of that. But we're saying that God's the supreme controller, the supreme everything, the lawmaker, but then you have this other entity that does things separate from God. Right? So it's like the Mayavadis that you have illusion, but where did it come from? Because there's only Brahman. But then illusion is there. So it's a separate entity. Where did it come from? They can't answer. It's like the same, the nothingness. So once you get down to this root point, then they all turn into basically the same thing. That's why then Prabhupada can use the term Nirvise Shunyavadi, because that basically covers them all. Right? From that, then everything goes back to there. Because ultimately they're incomplete. Now, because of completeness of accepting the Veda and completeness in accepting these aspects of the Lord, then to that degree that they accept, then that is appreciated in their presentation. And if they give something very nicely explained and all that in the particular field, there's no need to re-explain it, because like that, that's used. Just like Nyaya is used from Gotama. Even though the rest of his philosophy is not complete. But the mechanics of logic are solid, so therefore everybody else will use that, because that's what's revealed to him. And then he makes a philosophy out of it. You know, it's just like sometimes someone's there, then they see some unique perspective, and then they try to make a whole philosophy based on that, rather than that perspective is part of a greater understanding. Right? Then it takes on a particular, you know, flavor and all that. So, yes.
But you said that also, like, the bad stuff is not separate. You said it's just a lack of Krishna.
Yes.
So
it's a lack of Krishna consciousness. It's a lack of the superior qualities.
Okay.
But the point is that still, Alakshmi is still a potency of Krishna. It's still his potency. And it will be the negative, you know, of the positive. So you can still see, you know, the cause and the effect.
So it's not a lack of Krishna, it's a lack of Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Okay.
means for us. Because Krishna is all him anyway, so there's no lack of Krishna.
Yeah.
There's plenty of Krishna. Yeah.
I just want to confirm my understanding regarding the terms, you know. We always use the term material cause. So material cause is we used here, and then in the previous part we used ingredient of creation. So
ingredients and material cause are the same.
The same.
You're just taking it from different angles. See, that's the whole point of that, with using the words, that you're using the words, the synonyms are giving different angles. So you're using these different words to bring out a different perspective for that particular situation that you're discussing. Does that make sense? So when you're saying material cause, then you're talking about that the material world itself is transforming. But how does it have that potency? That comes from the Lord. Therefore, the ingredients that they have the potency to transform, that Maya can transform them, or the material cause, is because Krishna is those ingredients. Like that. So you're just bringing out different angles whenever you use different words. Right? You know, when you say it's nice, then you're talking of the context is that it has some positive elements to it. When you're saying it's good, then you're saying that it's got positive, not negative. Right? When you say nice, you're not referring to the negative at all. But when you say good, you're referring that it doesn't have the negative. So it's just a matter of what you want to bring out in a particular description.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yes.
But how does something that's just as Krishna as another thing result in lack of Krishna consciousness for us?
Because we're the ones that it's not that Krishna is the cause of our lack of Krishna consciousness. That's our own free will. We have to understand is that we're here 100% due to our own doing.
No, but I'm talking about like Maya, like how that's.
I mean, she's an assistant of the Lord. She's taking care. It's just like, let's say, you have the businessman. He's running the business. The people are assisting. Someone does, you know, marketing. Someone does, managing. Yes, there's this brains going into mush, right? Yeah, so does that make sense? So they're just taking part in that, but the whole point is what they're doing is under the direction of the businessman.
Yeah, so both Mahamaya and Yogamaya are under the direction of Krishna, but why is one make us not Krishna conscious and one makes us Krishna conscious if the potency of Krishna is there in the
system? It's because it's our desire, what we want to do with it. It's not the thing. Like it's like you have, let's say, a pile of potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
Now a kid will come up and they'll start playing with them, throwing them, rolling them around, you know, making Mr. Potato Head, you know, all that kind of stuff. And an adult will take it and cook it. You know, a farmer will take them and cut them up into pieces and plant them and grow more potatoes. So, but the potatoes, they have that. You can do things with it. Now it's just a matter of whether you want to see it in relation to Krishna. The whole point is Krishna and his energy. So Krishna as Bhagavan, then you have the aspect of his desire, his Icha. So then that is the interaction with his devotees. So then that interaction with devotees, then you have to have the environment, you have to have the ability that environment can transform to be used as a medium of expression of that devotion and that affection between the Lord and the devotees. So that itself then has its own mechanics. It's all Krishna, but it's the supportive aspect of Krishna.
Okay.
And so, therefore, when we see those supportive aspects separate from Krishna, that's called material consciousness. When we see them in connection with Krishna, then that's called spiritual consciousness. So it's up to us how we see it.
But there are also, like, certain sinful activities or sinful things that just cannot be connected.
The point is that it means you say they can't be connected. But
no,
how do they work?
That. You said that.
Sorry?
You said it.
See, if it's going to be a whole thing about you said this, you said that, then what's the whole point? Go on internet. You know, that's the place where you do this stuff.
No, I'm not.
You want to know stuff, then say it's confusing because you said this and that. Because
yeah.
You're trying to understand there's differences of uses of terms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How we're using it. See, we're taking the same words, and when you use it in one context, it's fine. Then when you use the word in a different context, then that previous one has to be wrong? No, they're both right. We're trying to expand how we look at it. Don't just look at it from the semantic of the word when we're missing the context of the word. So you have to ask about that, how the context has changed. So it appears it was used like this, so that. So there's always, well, you said this, but that's not the whole point. We're trying to discuss what's going on here. They can't be used meaning that the conditioned soul, their attachment to these things distracts them. That's why it can't be used. And for the pious soul, it's not your natural form to use, so that's why they wouldn't use it. But it's not that you can't see Krishna and connect it and make some advantage. But the point is you have to be able to give up the attachment to the previous level as you move forward. And the problem with the sinful activities is their intensity. People don't tend to move forward.
So you're saying it's not...
You understand, like in Gita, it says Krishna is... he says he's both sex life according to religious principles. Mm-hmm. And he also says that if it's just based on lust, he is the Cupid. He's that potency behind it.
Yeah.
So it's Krishna in all senses. Uh-huh. So if you see that aspect that is Krishna is that potency, then you start to see it in relation to Krishna. So whether you're starting from lust or whether you're starting from duty, but you see the connection to Krishna, it will be improved. Uh-huh. But at some point, then the lust is given up for duty and the duty is given up for just being absorbed in Krishna.
Okay.
Yeah, does that make sense?
So can we say that it's the lack of the superior qualities that's a determining factor of?
It's the lack of our ability to see it in connection with Krishna.
Because we're marginal potency?
Because we have independence. And we are marginal potency. But it's we are marginal so we could choose, but it's our independence that we're using when we choose.
Okay.
Set? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the material. So they argue that material cause is different from the effect. They argue that that usage of articulations such as material cause and material effect are distinct. Are distinct implies there's a difference between the two. See, they can't. We'll say there's a difference and there's a oneness. So that's the point: is that without the Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, you can't actually fully explain to all degrees all the aspects that the Vedas describe. Means you can take one aspect and see it in that line, and it'll work. But it comes to its most natural position when you use the Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva. Otherwise, all the Vaishnava schools, those philosophies will work like that. But the difficulty is that they'll only give you Vaikuntha. You know, more or less sweetness depending upon the particular approach. But they'll only give you Vaikuntha. Only a Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva can give you Braj. No other school can give you. Because as we mentioned, the other schools, as soon as majesty is there, it restricts or it modifies their love. But with the Brajvasis, because they can see both and there's not a contradiction between them, therefore they don't have a problem with opulence and sweetness. So it doesn't modify their affection. So that means without this, you can't actually understand Braja Bhakti. It's just not possible. Doesn't mean you can't appreciate Vrindavan, but you won't understand Braj. That's the whole difference.
Maharaj?
Yes.
So then, as you mentioned, Achinta Bheda Bheda makes it most complete. Therefore, can we say that the other sampradayas, you know, which lack Achinta Bheda Bheda, are like the same principle applies of complete, more complete, and most complete?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Means they're all transcendental, they're all perfect. But then you'll see that those that can accommodate up to Dwarka Mathura are more perfect. Right? And then when you get up to Braj, that's the most perfect.
So their philosophies, you know. Then what happens is that when we try to explain them Achinta Bheda Bheda, they're not able to follow it.
But don't worry about it. Why worry about it? means why, you know, how often are we sitting there with a, you know, practicing Shri or Mudra, and we're trying to explain to them a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva. Means if they ask, then we'll explain it to them. Like that. Because the point is they're taking a particular perspective to preach at that particular time. And so it works for that time. But a Chinta Veda Veda Tattva includes already what they're saying.
Maharaj, so you're saying that it's something so distracting that it doesn't enable us to move forward in Krishna consciousness nicely. So can we say the principle that for each individual, something that's too distracting for them is something that's not useful to, you should say?
No, the point is that according to your duties, you engage things in Krishna service,
mm-hmm.
right? Means we have our duties. We perform our duties in connection with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is, if it's within your duties, then you perform that. The sinful activities are outside of duties. Right? So we only actually are dealing with the connection, beginning with a connection of sinful activities by those who are from a background of sinful activities, malechas and yavanas. Otherwise, human beings wouldn't even bother with it. But we're saying those who are malechas and yavanas, because of their natural attachment to these things, then they can start there. Better they don't. Better they start on the human platform.
Mm-hmm.
So that's going to be our first recommendation. But otherwise, then they engage whatever position they are.
But I'm not asking about sinful activities now. I'm talking about anything that's distracting, like an overwhelming situation or a person.
Yes, but the point is it within your duties?
Mm-hmm.
If it's within your duties, then that's what you have to do, overwhelming or not. Then why did you choose those duties? Like if Grihastha life is overwhelming, why choose it? Right, brahmacharya life is not overwhelming. It means your major meltdowns are the place where you sleep every night. Someone else is sleeping there. You know, that's kind of like the limit. Or you went to go get your kopins and someone took them. You know, that's kind of like, you know, that's why we have that story of the sadhu and the mouse. Right, you know, he's thinking, oh my God, this is insane, like that. But then when he goes through the stages and all that, then he says, yeah, it was better with the mouse stealing the copens. Like that. So that's the point. It's your duties, you do. Like Arjuna, he's overwhelmed by it, but it's his duty, so he takes part. The sinful activities are not our duty, never our duty, so therefore then they're just avoided.
Yeah.
Right. The Sutrakar systematically defeats their doctor by proving the Vedantist doctrine of Sat Karyavad. Effect exists in the cause before the effect even manifests. Yeah, so that means everything's in Krishna first, even before it's manifest. So his energies are all there. So all these different things, whatever may be manifestations in the cosmos, those are already within Krishna before they're manifest. Then when he manifests them, then we see them. So they're already there. Yes.
Can we say in the same logic that Krishna consciousness is in us even before
yes,
we manifest
yes,
that?
Yes.
And then the more we manifest
it. It's the natural position. But it's just a matter of we're neutral whether we want to take up our natural position or not. That's all. Because we have the ideas that I'll be happy by focusing on these secondary activities rather than I'm happy, but that comes from another source, so that source is the Supreme, so therefore I take shelter of Krishna. But otherwise we think it comes from another source, that source is the secondary. Now, we can make that mistake because the secondary is Krishna by this point. He is the effect. So that's why we think there's something there, but it's a secondary aspect. So it's not directly seeing Krishna. Means if you look at it, you can see that Krishna is there. Right? You know, it's just like it's potential. Everybody is in the same situation, but somebody sees, each individual sees different things you can gain from that situation. So that's that you see the situation and then what's behind it. So when one's God conscious, then you see Krishna behind it. You see how Krishna is connected.
So when you say about manifestation and unmanifestation, it is equivalent to creation and destruction, then?
On the material, it's creation and destruction, but otherwise it's just transformation, because it's not actually destroyed. It's just our concept of what it is destroyed.
Annihilation.
It's another word, but meaning that we see the dog is there, and then the dog's not there, right? Like that, how you say? He had too close of a relationship with the truck that went by, right? So then the dog's not there. So, but the point is the dogness never goes away. It's still there. Whether it's manifest as this particular dog or not doesn't change the fact of the principle of what is a dog.
Okay, so we're speaking over here basically of the potness, not of the pothood. And the effect is existing in the cause. Means we're speaking of the potness.
Yes, the potness is there, but the point is that that's already within the potter. Otherwise, why is he a potter?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Yes. And this potter happens to be Hari, right?
Yes.
So therefore, that's why he's the ultimate potter, and all things are made from him. Yes?
Okay. We found the original
Jesus. Yes, we found. As we go through Vedanta Sutra, we see everything connects back. Yeah, there's nothing that doesn't come from somewhere. So you can see here is that this is where you start getting the aspect of all the separating God from his creation. He's created it, but he's not in control of it. He doesn't deal with it in that, because they're not able to understand about the principle of our karma, and that it's we're the one that's creating the problem, not God. Like that.
What is the difference between sutra and sutrakara?
Sutra is the Vedanta Sutra itself. Sutrakara, kara means one who is written.
Okay.
So sutrakara means Vyasadeva. Like that, the writer of the sutras.
Maharaj, is this like in support of chance theory?
Any of these things you can throw into here. But here they're not accepting the supreme, but yes, it goes back to it's coming from nothing. Because that's what they're going back to, is that they'll come from this infinite, like the Big Bang is some infinitesimal small thing, but if you can measure it, it's not infinitesimal. But, and then out of this, you get this unlimited, you know, but then if we go by the physics, you know, what is it? Newton's third law, for every action there's a reaction, you know, like that. And energy is never, it just transforms. All these things, how can you take unlimited and stuff it into infinitesimal? That doesn't make any logical sense by science, you know. Does that make sense? Otherwise, we can try it. Take the scientists and try to stuff him into a shoebox or something. And let's see if the theory can work. And then once he's in the shoebox, then we'll, you know, light a firecracker underneath it. And when it goes bang, then it should be that the scientist comes out in his full glory. Right? You know, that's the funny part. Anything you do a bang with, it falls apart. But they're saying there's a bang and it goes together. Are we dealing with real intelligence here or something? So that's the point, is that they use their brain up to a point, and then at a point they turn off their brain because they can't explain it. So you'll see is on the material platform, it always does this. So only in the Vaishnava philosophy, in the Vedanta, then you can actually explain everything as much as is the capability of the individual. Right? But that is dependent upon the revelation. Does that make sense? By our own intelligence, we can't understand that. But by that association, then we get the opportunity, then it can be appreciated.
Okay? I'm just wondering, because...
So in other words, all mundane philosophies, whatever they are, come out of these six schools.
Mm-hmm.
But the six schools are the six schools. Every other philosophy is a little bit from here and there, a little snippet, a little, you know, little something. Does that make sense? Yeah.
All these so-called philosophies, they kind of sound very stupid and illogical.
Yes.
Even, I mean, common child can understand proper logic.
Yes.
Behind.
Yes, so if they're in a contact with the devotees, then it can be very easily understood. Like when we go through this, and we'll get to the presentation of the philosophy. Now, then we'll see is that generally the philosophy, we say, well, what is this? It's very big. Right? So then you end up with the things. But otherwise, then if you look at it from its crux, then it becomes very simple. Right? It means, what's the soul? Okay, we take Abrahamic religions. Then the soul is, they're not sure. It's the body, it's maybe the mind, but they can't say what it is. So in other words, they don't know what the soul is. But they have an inkling that there is such a thing. That there's something beyond just what we see as the body and mind. But at the same time, as they can't define it, so it is the body and mind, but it's beyond the body and mind. But, you know, so that doesn't make any sense. God, he's the supreme, he's the controller, he's the creator, maintainer, destroyer, he's the judge, he's the witness. But at the same time, he's not involved in all this stuff here, because if he is, then why is it all going bad? Right? Right? So then they don't understand, they understand he's the supreme, but they don't understand his energies. Right, and they don't understand him as Rasa. So you say everything's nice here, and he's just a jealous god that if you do something wrong, then you know, zot, you know, your little pile of ash when the lightning bolt comes down, and, you know, or the earth opens up and you fall in, or a combination, you know, like that. Whatever works, right? So they're not explaining these things nicely. You know, so they can't explain the soul, they can't explain God fully. You know, what's material energy? Oh, that's been given to us by God for our enjoyment. Right? And so then that's it. So what's the process? Enjoy God's creation, you know, sticking to the laws of God. And what's the perfection? Go to heaven, we'll all enjoy materially forever because I follow God's laws and I'm a good guy. That's the philosophy in a nutshell. Right? But if you ask, you know, even a theologian, explain the Christian doctrine, that they won't be able to say it that simply. Because this is how philosophy works. These are the divisions. Then how you define it, because they'll take something else and, you know, like that. Christ died for our sins. Okay, that's guru. How does that fit in there? Because unless there's God, he's representing God. But they can't even define. Is he God? Is he a representative of God? You know, who is it? You know, so this divides the church itself so greatly. You know what I'm saying? On this one point. The difference between most all the different East, West, and all these different things is how they define Jesus. Is he God or is he not God? Or is he, you know, started off not God, then became God. He always was God. He never became God, but he just became a great guy. You know, so like that. That is the difference between them. But otherwise, they'll be seeing, oh, this, all the ritual. You know, these guys wear this color, those guys wear that color, these guys shave their heads, these guys don't. You know, that will be the difference. But no, the difference is how God is Jesus. That's the whole thing. So that's what we're saying, is that the Upanishadic approach is the most clear, because it gives something very easily, then you can compare everything. Because otherwise, if you go by the secondary, you can't compare, because it's just so different. You know what I'm saying? I thought, you know, so I say, you know, it's just like they say the Christians, they eat crackers, but it's considered more of a, how you say, a glorious thing. The Jews eat crackers, but it's more of a remembrance of lamentation. But, you know, crackers will be eaten, you know. You know, and then I think you go to Paris, they'll also eat crackers. They'll put some cheese on top and olive on top, you know, and so, yeah. That makes sense? Yeah, because the other two, they don't bother with cheese and crackers, not even salt, right? At least these Jews put some butter on it, you know, like that. But, you know. Now, the thing would be a French Jew. Now that would be perfection, right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that we're trying to see, is that when we understand completely the philosophy, how all these elements, then it becomes very easy to deal with these. Because they all fit into just these categories. And it's not that there's a lot to know. I mean, there's more to know of our philosophy. Once you know that and know their approach to these five things, then you can deal with any philosophy. So you don't actually have to study. It's just like you have the, what do you call it? That one, I think it's a two-volume book. Science of Self-Realization, is that it? The one where he probably talks on all the different philosophies? No, no. Yes.
That is Science of Self-Realization.
Science of Self-Realization. So in there, then he would present philosophy, Prabhupada could answer it. Didn't matter what it was. But the point was, is no matter the point, Prabhupada had an answer because he understands philosophy. So you can see where it's not philosophy. So that's what we're trying to do here, is understand what is philosophy. And so then the Vedanta, that is philosophy. And the most accommodating or the most clear is the Achintabheda Veda Tattva. It's famous for just condensing things down to very simple and direct, because the point is, it is simple. It's all Krishna. But at the same time, it's very sophisticated, because Krishna is a person and he is everything. So how all this works? Is that,
so the secret lies in simplicity.
Yes, in simplicity.
But for those who are
simplicity, but it has the sophistication according to the need of application.
At the same time, for those who are making things so complicated, it looks for them so complicated.
Yes, because they can't tell the difference between complicated and sophisticated.
Yes.
Because simple means it never changes. It always has, whatever you're expanding the sophistication, you always have a core principle you can relate it to.
Yeah.
And if you do that, it doesn't become complicated. Uh-huh. Does that make sense? Otherwise, as we add things, it becomes complicated. But when we see what we're adding is simply performing the same functions, then it's not complicated. Does that make sense? Like, let's say I'm cooking. I use a deep pot. Why? Because I have a volume of you know, whatever is there. But at the same time, as the element of, let's say, frying or stirring is not the main point. Now, let's say if I use a karai or a wok, that's because the frying aspect is more. You know, so if I have volume, I have to have a quite big pot. But in the same size of space, I could have a, you know, straight-sided pot, and I would get more volume. But then I have less opportunity for stirring. And if I stir, I break things. So if I want to stir and not break things, the wok works better. Right? And then if I just want to fry it like this and that, then I can use the flat pan. You know what I'm saying? So if that's flat, because if it's things that it doesn't matter or this and that, but otherwise it's easier to use a flat pan to fry, you know, big flat things than it is a wok, because a wok is curved. So the one could say is, oh, this is complicated. No, it's simply you're applying heat to the substance to cook it. Now it's just a matter of what is the substance and what effect you want. Therefore, you change the pot. Otherwise, yeah, one pot you could cook everything. I've seen it. You know, you have the big flat pot, you know, the high sides, and you know, and I've seen cooks, they'll take it and turn it on the edge.
Yes.
On the fire. So all the geese sits down at the bottom, they make their chaunts, and when that's done, then they put it back flat and then throw things inside. So you can do. You understand? So it's just a matter of what you would. But if you want to avoid that, then you either use a wok for that or you have a spoon. And you make the, put the stuff in, it's boiling, you make the chaunts in the spoon, throw that inside. You understand? So it's not complicated. It's very, very simple. So that ability to take it down to that simplicity, that's then the kind of intelligence that the Vedantas, means the Vaishnava Vedantas, are trying to get to. And especially Achintabheda Veda Tattva, because for us, the Jnana Shakti is not the prominent Shakti. It's the Icha Shakti that's prominent. But to fulfill Krishna's desires, we use the Icha and Jnana, Jnana and Kriya Shaktis to fulfill Krishna's desire. But it's not the emphasis. But those who are attached to Jnana, then for them that simplification is like poison. Because the uniqueness is the complication of it. And that I have the intelligence that I know that and are comfortable in using that, while the common person doesn't. In fact, there's even a term for the common person. They call it the lay person. right? Means he just doesn't know. I know he doesn't know. And so that distinction is then what makes them, that gives them their identity. That's what makes it worth all the trouble, too, that you stuck your nose in the book, you know, all those years and got a 4-point average, missed out on all the parties, all the fun, all the friends, all the everything. But now you can consider yourself superior, you know, and now you make all the money and all that. And now you got your Jag, you got your house and that. Of course, there's no one there to enjoy it with. And because now you work, you know, 20 hours a day down at the hospital, you never, you know, can enjoy it. But you feel superior. So for them, they don't want to simplify. Because if you simplify, you can explain it to a child. They don't like that because that's their attachment. No, I'm an adult. Only I can understand that. But that's complicated. That's the expert. The expert is attached to this. The master is not. Because the master, that's the whole point of the mastery. It is that simple. Therefore, you can apply it in every situation. Well, the expert can apply it if everything's perfect. Does that make sense? You know, so, yeah. So that's the difference in what we're doing. We're trying to get to that understanding of the mastery of it. That's the purpose. Because then you can apply it. Because a master then is someone who can do it, he can teach it. An expert is someone who can do in special situations, but generally can't teach because they don't want to teach, because then they have to simplify things to teach. Right? So in other words, if you can walk in on a high level already, you already know things, then okay. Right? You know, it's just like I saw so many times, Sanskrit course is going to start. You have to come already, you can know Devanagari and you already know this much of Sanskrit. Then you can come to the course. Because they figure you can study that on your own, but past that you won't really know how to put it together. But they're not going to bother with that because it's not interesting to them. So in other words, teaching is not interesting to them, but it's something they do because it's a brahminical activity. But that you can take someone from knowing nothing, teach them that up to the top platform, that's mastery. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's like you see us in its form more from the angle of jnana and kriya, we see through the Bhagavatam as being discussed. Then the 10th canto, it gets to the icha aspect. But you see Chaitanya Charitamrita, the sophisticated points are made, even more sophisticated, but it's all about icha. It's about Bhagavans. And so it has a sweetness to it, even though it is actually more sophisticated, its presentation. Does that make sense? But the point is we won't appreciate the sweetness if we haven't already grasped the mechanics, how it works, and be comfortable with it. Because that's the thing, is the tasting of that, that's what that level is for. Now we're adjusting everything, understanding how it all fits, then we're fixed in that. Then there's the taste.
Then we say that first five philosophies only deals with karma or jnana and
karma or jnana, yes. But then if you're taking the sixth as Shankara, when we say the six schools meaning bogus philosophies, then that includes Shankara Vedanta. If we're saying the six schools meaning five and one, then we're not including Shankara there. Does that make sense? But otherwise, so you see it in both ways. Sometimes you see it, there's the six schools and we're one of them, or the six schools and they're all bogus. So it just depends on the context on whether where Shankara is being placed.
So they are not touching the icha part. They only...
No, they don't even understand Bhagavan. That's the whole point. They don't catch the Bhagavan aspect. So that's why then we don't, we're discussing them on these levels to try to understand, you can understand the foundation, but you're trying to get from the secondary to the primary.
Yes.
Primary is it's about Krishna.
Yes.
And so the secondary is discussed as much as it stops being a distraction for us.
Yes.
Right? Material means we're distracted by the secondary. Spiritual means the focus is on the primary. You know, and mixed means it's in between. So we're trying to get from this mix to this pure state where it's about Krishna, and then how to see it in connection to Krishna, rather than, you know, is it possible to see it? Is it something important to me? Why should I do this? Why, you know, all these kind of doubts. Once those are cleared that, yes, this is the way it is, and I just apply that, but it's not about the mechanics of it, it's about pleasing Krishna. Then we start getting, you know, what's being given. Because all these things are saying this, but the point is they're saying these things, but they're dealing on different aspects to bring it out. Once you get to the advanced level, which means then you appreciate that Krishna is the Lord of Rasa, that everything that goes on is Rasa, and it's all Krishna and his potencies working, then you can deal with relationships in Rasa and not be distracted. Right? Like Sukadeva Goswami can talk about Krishna and the gopis or all these different kings and their wives and, you know, all these different aspects and not disturbed because they're just explaining how it works. So there's nothing for them to do. Does that make sense? So it's not an attraction for them. As long as it's an attraction for us, then we're very careful about it. And when it's not attraction, then you can talk about it, but why would you talk about it? Right? Because people talk about mundane things because of the attraction. If there's no attraction, why would you talk about it? So you'd only talk about it in relationship to Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Yeah. Right. So let us say, who was that? I can't remember if it was Priyavrata or that gave. There was a verse or a few verses on how he was interacting with his wife.
Priyavrata.
And then how she was responding, the moves, the sweet talks, the, you know, the whole, like we were seeing that the queen's a dwarka. You know, is how they're using that kama rupa aspect. But you see is that there's no attraction for that. So now in that, it shows what techniques are used. Like that. Bhagavatam, we're talking about the queens, it only refers to it. It gives a slight hint, but not more. Because you already know the field. You know? Like that. So, therefore you don't have to give it, but the Bhagavatam gives a little more detail so you can see the connection. Now from that, then it should be the idea is that from there, then that would be your natural progression into how all this connects to Krishna and how it's pleasing, how to please Krishna by connecting everything within your duty to Krishna. And so therefore you're performing the duty in line with what's the method of doing it, but you're not doing it for what benefit you'll get, but for how that can be used as the medium to express affection for Krishna. Right? But because that aspect's not seen, then we get onto a whole 2-week discussion on about how men and women interact in family life. But not from the angle of how it connects to Krishna, but what I can do and how I can, my family life will go better. You understand? So that's the whole thing. Just like, okay, let's say, the husband is the authority and the wife follows the authority. So that part of it will catch very nicely. So in other words, man, whatever I say, she's going to do. But what about the part of that where, because he's representing Krishna, and so therefore, then he's engaging the wife in all things that are connected with Krishna, and that's what's going on. So therefore, her feminine response and appreciation and service is all actually directed at Krishna. So it's not about us. It's not about us enjoying it. What about that part of the discussion? That is never brought up. If you have family life discussion, that point is never, ever, ever brought up. Because we want to enjoy it. We want to claim it for ourselves. So that's what I'm saying is that everything's given in all levels of the Shastra. We just don't see through to that. So just as Bhagavatam alone give a hint at these lower aspects to show where it connects, then these other scriptures will give a deep body of detail of that and show where it connects. Right? So the difference is just where it's emphasizing. That's all. But it's all the same thing. It's all Krishna. It's just, are we emphasizing more about Jnana and Kriya or more about Icha? Does that make sense? So that's what goes on, is that the different Shastras, they're bringing out different aspects. Hmm?
the apparent difficulty with Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva seems to be is that we're dealing simultaneously with tattva and rasa.
Yes.
And in terms of tattva, as you explained, you know, we attach, so we have a lot of misgivings, like personal things. And in terms of rasa, we also attach, because we project, like you said, you know, Krishna and Rukmini, and then we see the whole thing, me and my wife happens, and you know, what's going on. So, although it is natural philosophy, but we can't really apply it because it's very far away from our own, you know, personal development.
But with the Chinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, you solve that problem because it's simultaneously very far away, very near as well, because it's inherent to the jiva. But because of our consciousness, we've brought ourselves in consciousness far away from Krishna. But we're still situated in Krishna. Krishna's in the heart. It's our natural position to do this. The soul is always itself in a transcendental position, though consciousness-wise, we may not appear that way. So then that gives, because it's very far away, then we lose that inspiration, but it's very near, so then we have that inspiration. So that's why it's important to use it, because then both are there. Because, but it's, you know, what about this? Oh, it's so far, no, but what about this? So it balances. That's what I see, is that the Vaishnavas are the most balanced. Like once it was something that it struck me that at the time. Aren't there normally five? Wasn't that only four? Was four. It was five?
Four.
Four, yeah. Because one's late. So, it struck me as that once I was discussing something about Prabhupada and this devotee, he said Prabhupada is the most normal person. Meaning normal means not crazy. Not normal meaning ordinary. Because normal can also be ordinary. Because once in the discussion I mentioned that to somebody about how he's the most normal. Mm-hmm. They said, no, he's not normal, he's special. Yeah, so because it's a different context. But here normal means just most natural person. Because he's so Krishna, fully absorbed in Krishna, so everything's connected to Krishna, everything's perfectly balanced. Like that. So that's the whole point, is that the razor's edge is perfectly in the middle. And when we get to one side or the other, that's where the problem is. So it's not an anxiety. It works both ways. That's the beauty of the... Achintya. So it's inconceivably one and different. So Krishna reveals. So if we apply ourselves, have that faith in it, even though we may not understand it, then Krishna will in good time reveal. But if we don't understand it, and then that's the authority for it not being an authority, you know, or authoritative, then we'll never understand. Because if it's, okay, you want to use your intellect, go ahead. But you can never, by material intelligence, understand. So it's only when Krishna reveals. That's why Shraddha is such an important thing. And that Vyavasayatmika Buddhi, that we're focused, that one-pointed focus on what, you know, is given to us by the Acharyas. And so that being given, then everything works very nicely. So when that faith is there, then everything's revealed. That's that what's that? You know, for one who has faith in Guru and Krishna, then everything will be revealed. Is that Yasya Devi Parabhakti? Yeah. Like that. So someone who has that, then it will be revealed because they have faith in both and they're following the order of Guru, then Krishna will reveal everything. But it's not by intelligence. We use our... means whatever intelligence we have, we use it. It was always interesting in the... You know, if we go back like 10 years or something in the classes. And now and again, you know, sometimes some of the boys would come and sit. And it was interesting to note that one of the boys would come and ask questions, means he'd come and sit, and so many questions, technical questions were asked. You know, more intellectual kind of questions, more technical and all that. But then after a long time of discussion, then this boy would ask a question and be more about the essence. And the interesting thing is that that individual is probably one of the least intellectual in the school. But he would understand things more just because of that faith. So it would be revealed. Though academically, there's not a whole lot there. But it was revealed, so then he would understand in a much deeper way. Like that. So that's the thing, is that whether you have a lot of intelligence or not, that's not a prerequisite. So when we say intelligent, we mean that you can appreciate that this position of us as the soul, Krishna as God, and that relationship, and that bhakti is the natural position. So if that's appreciated, that's intelligent. With that kind of intelligence, then everything will be revealed. So...
When you're speaking about Prabhupada in this matter as well, like, I would really appreciate that he was so sober. I think, right? It takes a lot of sobriety to be able to study the scriptures and understand them properly. Right?
Yes, yes. But the point is that it's a matter of how much you're studying. Generally, when we say study the scriptures, we take it by volume. Right. But study means by what you're gaining from what you're studying. So you may just read, you know, a paragraph and get so much from it, and that's all you are reading. Well, someone else can read, you know, so many pages. And so it's just a matter of the particular individual, their capacity, what tools they have, and how they use them. So point is, anybody can become Krishna conscious. That's why it mentions the gopis. They're not known as scholars, right? But they know Krishna the most. So that's the point is... But Narad Muni, he's known as a scholar, and he knows Krishna. So that's the point. Scholars know, and those who are not. The point is this devotion. Because when we think of Narad Muni, we don't think of him as a scholar. We think of him as a devotee. Right? And when we think of the gopis, we don't think of scholars, we think of devotees. But the point is when it comes to authority on Krishna, then these two are always who we're going to take. I mean, everybody will accept from these two. Does that make sense? Others, we, you know, as Lord Shiva says, he may or may not know. You know? But, what's it? Parikit knows.
Vyasa may or may not know.
You know, Arvyas knows, but it's not a regular thing that he knows. Okay. Then Adikarna 6, 8 through 13, Sutras 13, 21 through 33. Brahman, the creator. The opposition's viewpoint that oneness between the Lord and the Jiva will not render the difference between them is refuted by proving that the Lord and the Jiva are unique individuals, and even in oneness, the difference between the two continues to exist. That's the thing, is that Achinta Beta Beta, you can establish that they're one and they're different. Right? Because that's the whole thing. They'll take, if they're oneness, then there is no Jiva. Or if there is, then they're different. And so you can't then, if everything's Brahman, then how is the Jiva there? Because then you have to remove the Jivaness of the Jiva, then you become Brahman, then it's all okay. But then if it is like that, what do you care? Because you don't exist anyway. You know, so why all the endeavor? You know, so that's the whole thing, is they are one. In other words, Krishna sees the oneness, we see the difference. And because of that, then rasa can be tasted. So it's because of this, that's why there's rasa. Because if there's just oneness, what's the rasa? Right? It's when there's difference, that's when there's rasa. But if it's only difference, then how do you have a relationship? So there has to be a common point. So the oneness is the common point. The difference is then the basis of the rasa. The whole scheme by the rivals in promoting the defective concept of oneness of Brahman and Jiva is to establish that the Jiva is the creator. Right? So Jiva's creator, nothing's creator, Pradhan's creator, but God's not creator. Right? You know, anything but that. You know, we're not creator. The Sutrakar refutes the opponents and proves the validity of Brahman as the creator as follows. Brahman is the efficient cause, hence Brahman is the creator, Adhikarana 8. Jiva can't create sense. One, he doesn't have the necessary powers, right? Remember is that create, you have to be able to supply the ingredients. Maintain, you have to supply the ingredients. Destroy, you have to be able to reabsorb the ingredients. That's why Brahma and Shiva only take part in the process and why they can't maintain. Because Krishna is he is the ingredients. Then taking that, they put things together. Taking that, you break it apart. Is that? Yeah. I see. Two, he is dependent on the concealed mercy of the independent Lord. Right? It's by the Lord's mercy. He doesn't see that. Paramatma is there only when he sanctions according to your consciousness and what work you're doing, then you get an effect. But without his mercy, which is hidden, then you don't know. Because you do something great, you think, I did that. You don't know. Because otherwise, if you're doing it, you would know all along. Right? The guy goes to do something, and he doesn't know if it's going to happen or not. And when it does, then now he's the one who did it. But if he's the one doing it, why wasn't he the one doing it all along? So that means is that he makes the endeavor, the whole thing transforms, works out the way they want it, and now he's the one who did it. So we can see as no, you were the instrument because you took part in that initial phase, then it transforms, you're keeping it, your involvement, you're seeing the transformations going in the direction of what you're looking for. And then when the result comes, you didn't make the transformation. You only took part as an instrument. Does that make sense? So you did all the things that you could do in that process, you know, or that is your duty. Like it's your duty to plug in the blender and push the button. Right? But the blender does the blending. We don't do it. You can't claim to do it. You know, stick your finger in a pot with full of, you know, things and move it around and see does it blend. Okay, maybe if it's yogurt, yeah, then we're the blender. Yeah. Okay, so, but other than that, then not so much. Yeah? So that's the whole thing. But we claim, so as Krishna is the concealed mercy of the Lord. It's all going on. But because we want to take credit, yes, thank you. You want to take credit, therefore, then Krishna lets us take credit, because it's not a big deal for him. He's doing it anyway, so he knows who he is. Right? Okay. Hence, Brahma is the creator, Adhikarana 9, right? He just is taking part. Shastra's state of fabulous creations arising from desire trees. Similarly, we can further trust Shastras which speak of various creations arising from the Lord. Hence, Brahma is the creator, Adhikarana 10. Right? So, Krishna has done all these things, and then Brahma is dealing with this.
Brahman.
Brahman is the creator, yes. Before it was, okay. Oh, Brahman is the creator. Yeah, not Brahma.
Yeah.
Okay, so Brahman's the creator because he's the hidden mercy. Right? So, point is, Brahma seems to be doing it, but it's actually without Krishna, he can't. Because we see, when he appears on the lotus, everything's there, he can't do anything. So it's only when he does tapasya, with the instruction of the Lord, then he gets the Lord's mercy, then he can create. So Brahman is actually the perfect, what's doing. The Lord possesses unlimited powers to perform countless actions. Hence, Brahman is the creator. Because all the action is there, it needs various potencies to do that. Right? And therefore, each potency has so many aspects within it, and the various combinations, you get your unlimited results. So he's the source of all that. Then he's the creator. The Lord doesn't have material senses, but alternatively possesses transcendental senses. Hence, Brahman is the creator. Adhikarana 12. Right? Because he's the one behind all this. He's the one who's perceiving and has the desire for things to work out. That's why it works. Then the Lord's blissful nature induces him to perform the action of creating the world, lacking any personal motivation, ambition, or need. Hence, Brahman is the creator. Because we'll do all these things with personal motivation, ambition, and need. Krishna has no need. He doesn't need the material world. It's one of his energies, but it's not necessary for him to use it for interaction, because for him it's rasa, the interaction between the living entity and the Lord. his material energy is not conscious. Where's going to be the interaction? So there's nothing to gain there. Right? And using the mechanics upon it, the knowledge upon it, and because it transforms because of that, that's not what's important. When that you add to that affection, that's what's then important to him. So when you add affection, you're not dealing on the material platform anymore. Right? So therefore, for him, he has no ambition or need for this. There's nothing for him to gain. Therefore, it's just being created because the living entity wants to function separately, so they're given the opportunity. And then when they do that for a while and figure out that's not going to work, then they come back to their natural position. Right? So we can see that these essential fundamentals of the Vedanta philosophy, these are the points that they take in these other philosophies and then take part of it, what part they like, and then make something out of it. You know, how you say, making mountains out of molehills. You know? Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prema Ki.